Hello and welcome to edition 272 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. You join us once again recording this online rather than at the pub where we'd all quite like to be. But as ever, we're bringing you all the latest news and talking points from Formula 1. Coming up, a desert miracle, Haas get Maz, and Corona strikes again. I am Damon Hill, radical and blogger Richard Baxter. Joining me on tonight's podcast is NRF1 podcast co-founder and PowerPoint extraordinaire, as we found out in the last recording, Perry Hamilton.
Nobody actually took me up on that. So, you know, I could be bluffing. You don't know. But hi, Rich. Hi, Rich. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Also joining us tonight is our own F1 fan from south of the border, the ever bullish Katie Sandals.
Hiya.
Hello. How are you?
Good, Tom. Nice to be back.
Oh, absolutely. It's been a while. So, But no, you're doing okay, enjoying the current season of Formula One.
It's nice to, in an ever-changing world, it's become one of the constants at the moment. So you've got to enjoy that.
Oh, absolutely. And you, Ped, I bet it's nice to forget about work for a while.
oh, absolutely. And it's just we have a little setup in the house now where we have like a TV upstairs which has like a stick in it that, so when I say to my wife there's a Grand Prix on, she just kind of, you know, lazily looks up at the ceiling, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm watching that upstairs. So I trot up and I've got my little Scandinavian recliner, which is where I currently am now. Actually, I'm in the spare room stroke den, but I'm surrounded by Christmas decorations that we've not yet put up. So just waiting for that moment. But yeah, it's a nice little. It's well put actually, Katie, because it's that constant. It's that, you know, something that you can attach yourself to and anchor to, and it's escapism as well. I can sit for a couple of hours or longer, depending on what happens, as we saw. Mm. And I can just, you know, and I'm not looking at, so I know a lot of people do watch with social media in the background, but I'm not. I'm watching what's on TV. I'm taking interest. I might be having a bit of a chat with other people about the race. Like, we have our podcast group often on the go, talking about the race when it's on and stuff. And that for me is really nice, to just switch off and enjoy a sporting spectacle, which is, you know, the pinnacle of its, the pinnacle of its formula, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's always great to watch, and it's, I always think it's even nicer to be able to talk about it in the way we do.
Mm.
So we might as well jump in, because we're here to review the Bahrain Grand Prix, the first of two Bahrain Grand Prix, really. Now, what a thing to review this is. It's kind of difficult to describe, because we saw the most shocking and horrendous of accidents happen. Of course, Romain Grosjean having what's probably the biggest Formula One crash we've seen in decades. And something, to be honest, I don't think any of us were expecting to see. Now, everyone kind of, you can speak to people who aren't fans of Formula One and you can mention a name, Niki Lauda. And of course, because of the film Rush, everyone knows exactly who he is, exactly what happened, and has seen what happened there. And I think it's kind of fair to, in some respects, to link Grosjean's accident to what we saw with that. And to be honest, I'm still in a bit of shock with it all now, trying to think back and talk about it. I don't know how you guys feel, but it's to me, it seemed like a true miracle of how we got out of that.
Yeah, terrifying is actually, I mean, we were just having a chat before. And one of my friends, and a chap who's in our podcast group as well, we were messaging about it, and you know, we were shaking. We were saying to each other, like, I'm shaking just watching this. And you have, when he hit that barrier, and the fireball came out, it looked like how cars explode in movies. Mm. It didn't look real. You don't expect to see that, and you certainly don't expect to see it. We've seen cars flip. We've seen cars go, head over tail. We've seen them roll over on the side. We've seen two cars crash into each other. We've seen accidents. You know, it's not like we haven't. But a fireball of that magnitude, an explosion like that, it's utterly terrifying to watch.
Absolutely.
And you fear the worst.
Yeah. And Katie, you and me were talking just before we started, and we were kind of talking about, you know, previous times we've seen similar things. Now, you mentioned, obviously, Jos Verstappen in the Benetton days. with his pit lane fire, with the fuel going all over the car. And there was another one I know Martin Brundle was talking about, which was Gerhard Berger at Imola in 1989, where he hit the wall, then the car caught fire after that. It really isn't something we see very often, is it? And, you know, if at all these days.
No, you always associate those bigger crashes with the old days almost. Like, you know, people forget just generally that, you know, F1 seems to be quite safe these days. And then something comes along every once in a while. And sadly, in the last 5 years or so, we've seen it a couple of times, you know, obviously with Bianchi and then in F2 with Hubert, you know, that this is big incidents and people get hurt or, you know, die sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, I've been watching it since I was a little kid and I couldn't think of anything sort of immediately comparable. It's just so fast, so sort of almost violent in its nature. And then you just sat there unable to properly comprehend it. I was saying before that, you know, my sister, not an F1 fan at all, was messaging me like, oh, my gosh, what's happened? You know, is he going to be okay? You know, why is it, you know, it's everywhere. And because I do wonder, because of social media, it's suddenly what happens is everywhere instantly, that a crash like this maybe 10 even 10 15 years ago wouldn't have been so prominent, but because it spreads within an instant, and you know, there was footage flying around the world within minutes of it happening, suddenly everybody knows about it and it's a lot more public.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that changes the way we think about it.
I think you're spot on, and I think it really does change how we think about it. It changes how we consume it, but also, let's not kid ourselves here. It's monetized, and that's the cynic in me coming out and saying, you know, if you put a story up with a fireball for a race, people are going to click on it, even people that aren't F1 fans. Yeah. And that's the nature of how we disseminate news and how we've created that as a society. So I think you're absolutely right. It is out there. It's out there straight away. We've got the ability to share it instantly. And organizations straight away are going to say, right, this is going to drive clicks to the website. Clicks to the website equals money.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's so sad that that's the way it's got. And I mean... You know,
please don't get me wrong, Rich. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here saying that every news outlet that shared images of Romain Grosjean's crash wasn't there thinking, I really hope this guy's okay. That's not the cynical. Please don't think that I'm casting those aspersions upon media and news. But there is a race to be like, we need to report on this, and we need to be the first to report on this, because if we're the first link that people see, we are the link they're going to click on. So I want us to be the first people out there reporting on it, because it drives revenue. It's
Absolutely. I'm, you know, I'm a journalist. I work in news, and you know, you are racing there to get the story online first. And with something like that, I can only imagine that national, international media was going mad trying to get something on there, you know, straight away to let people know what was going on. And I think what people started to get more concerned about was the nature of some of the clips. Obviously, you know, the whole incident was pretty horrific until we knew exactly what, you know, that he was okay. Unfortunately, you know, he was. People were just a bit like, why? This is a bit too much to be sharing if we don't know if he's okay. You know, this might be the last clips we ever see of him alive.
Yeah. You know. And I mean, we should say at this point, you know, Roman, he does get a lot of stick, even from us at times. We'll be the first to admit it.
I don't know when I've ever said a negative word about him, honestly.
But even we'll all say, and we'll all agree, to see him safe and to see him still messaging from hospital, to see him smiling, it's really special, and it's something that's so good to see. And it brings us on what we need to go to, because it's so great, you know, that he is okay. And we're so fortunate we're in the position that we're able to talk about this and look back and be so shocked. But, you know, the guy walks away from it, which I think adds to the shock factor. But there was a lot of talk because Daniel Ricciardo, Ricciardo, as I know we like to call him, he questioned Formula One's motive. And Vettel, I saw on the news today, has joined him. But basically questioned Formula One's motive for showing so many replays of the accident during the red flag break. And Daniel Ricciardo said that it was insensitive and disgusting. It was shown so many times. Now, do you guys agree with his comments? What did you make of how many times it was shown?
I think you have to get a balance between, you know, with these sort of broadcasts, you've got people who might come drop in later, because this was obviously very early in the race. And if you just happen to miss the start of the race and you have no idea why it's on red flag, you want to know why.
Yeah.
But you've got to balance that, trying to explain to people. And it's difficult. I think we were saying before, you know, you've got to now fill essentially time. You've got time to fill and not a clear idea of when you're going to get start racing again. So you have to fill it with something. And sometimes that's got to be some sort of discussion of why you're in this predicament. But where he's talking, you know, where Ricardo's talking about is where it gets, you know, too much. And I think you can be inclined, if you know that this is again what we were saying, you know, if you think more people will watch it, keep watching, if you keep, replaying it, then you'll keep doing it. Or if you think you'll gather a bigger audience as people find out online and then join in and stuff. That's when I think you cross the line, because these are people, you know, these guys, they know each other. They're friends at the end of the day. And if you're having to watch somebody, you know, who you're friendly with or your colleagues with again and again, you know that this clip of them, you know, potentially dying is being played again and again. Then that's kind of a very personal sort of thing against you. You might take it as.
Yeah, and this was another little thing I added to this, which is very similar. Now, I basically kind of, on our little kind of notepad we have, I wrote down, where do you draw the line? And the question I want to know was, is it because Grosjean got out and he was okay, was it then they decided that it was acceptable viewing and they could just keep showing it?
Well, the thing is, you don't know he's okay. And that's the thing. Yeah, he's out. He's sat in the car. You know he's alive. Let's put it like that. You know he's alive immediately coming out of the car. But the whole speed of impact, and I think they did talk about it during the red flag stoppage. It's the main issue, and I learned this on a speed awareness course, so I have definitely been caught speeding in the past, and I've paid my dues for that, so I don't require any judgment for it. But on the speed awareness course, one of the things they talk about is that when you crash, there is a certain speed that you get to that when, even though the car might stop and your human body might stop, your internal organs still travel.
Yeah.
And it's then that they start to hit against other parts of the body, and there's, you know, tendons and sinews and things tightly stretched across your body. And, you know, you're a bit, for those of you that are squeamish, I'm ever so sorry, but it can cut into things like your liver and it can cut into your internal organs. Now, adrenaline's a fantastic thing. I'm not shocked at all that Romain Grosjean hopped up and popped out of that car, because if you're conscious and you're able to move your body, when you're surrounded by fire, your instinct is going to kick in and you're going to jump out of that car. But that does not mean that you are okay internally. It does not mean that you don't have significant injuries, fractures, breakages, internal organ bleeding, burns. Burns can be nasty things to deal with. So he's alive, and there's this automatic reaction of, oh my God, he's alive, he's okay. Mm. We don't know that he's okay, and you don't know to what extent those he has been damaged, as his body has been damaged.
Yeah.
I will say, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, Katie, your point is really pertinent. You're probably going to have, and I'd be really interested to know what the viewership figures were, but I reckon there was a spike in viewing figures from when it got out onto the internet. So there is an element there of, during that red flag, you are going to have new audience members joining, and they're joining specifically to see what happened, to understand potentially why it happened, and to understand that he's okay. So yes, there's probably a line if you've been watching those replays from the beginning, but if you only dropped in half an hour into the red flag stoppage, you still want to know what's going on. So I think there's an argument to be made there for that. The real devil's advocate side that I'm flipping here is, you signed up for this. It's your job. You must know that if you have an accident and you're not, you know, and the worst has not happened, that there's footage of that is going to be shown. Mm. And the thing for me is, isn't his wife a pit lane reporter? on Formula One?
I'm not sure.
She's a French TV personality. I knew that much, but I didn't know much.
Okay. I will not lie. I can't read her Twitter bio because it's in French. I don't understand French, but I took the impression from it, and I could be wrong. But I mean, if she's there, you got to understand she's going to be somewhere. Suddenly, she's going to be aware of this, and that I think for me is where I would start drawing the line. Say, look, we've explained it, okay, I made the point about your new audience members joining. If you're there, you say, guys, welcome to our new audience members. Yeah, we're currently in a red flag stoppage because of an accident that happened with Romain Grosjean. From what we know is he's okay, and we will keep you updated on that. However, until the race restarts, we're not going to be discussing the start any further. If you want to know what the analysis is around what happened, stick around until the end of the show. There's ways around it to be just that little bit more respectful. So while I play the devil's advocate card, my personal feeling is, I think they went to town a bit too much on it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think for the drivers especially, they are, they know they're risking their lives to bring us this sport that we love so much. And they know the risk factor that's involved, and they don't need reminding with 15 replays when they saw the guy in some cases next to them. There was a lot said about it. If you read the news, Grosjean's been talking about what he remembers and what he saw and his thoughts about it all. I'm not going to read them now because it's really quite almost heartbreaking in some respects reading kind of what his thoughts were going through it all. But it's a real insight into the mind of a Formula One driver and, these guys who do fight, they'll fight to do what they can. Credit to them for that.
I was just wondering, because we were obviously talking about the physical impact of it, but the mental impact of that race will be a lot, even when his hands have come out of those massive bandages that they're in at the minute. That will last a lot longer. I saw an article today from, I don't know if you remember her, the F3 racer, Sophia Flourish. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. She had a massive, awful crash at Macau a couple of years ago. And she was sort of saying, it's going to change his life. It won't change how passionate he is about racing, but that there will be this kind of mental battle after that as well for him. Based on her kind of experiences. And again, with her, it was one of those crashes that was, not many people, even within, F1 fans, might not know as much about F3. But if you showed them that crash, they'll have definitely seen it because that clip went round and round and round,
Yeah,
and everyone knows her for that crash.
Similar to this, the great Stirling Moss obviously had a huge crash himself. And he suffered a form of brain damage from it, and he got back in the car to race again a while later because he thought he had recovered. But then he soon found out that his mental capacity wasn't the same. He was doubting what he was doing, and he didn't feel comfortable with it anymore. So it's that kind of the mental aspect does come into it. But I know obviously this is Roman's last season with the Haas team. More news on that later on, by the way. But I really hope he can get back in the car for Abu Dhabi just to have a final race, just to, final goodbye to Formula One. And, just hope to see him again. And we should say the response to the actual, track response to what happened with the medical car and the marshals as well. They were there so quickly, they're so helpful. And it's worth remembering that a lot of these guys, especially the marshals, are volunteers who give up their free time on the weekends to go and help these guys. And it's a credit to them that we have these people, in the world. So well done, and thank you to the marshals and the whole medical team at the circuit, who we often don't see, but are always there doing their job.
Well said, Rich.
No,
It's well said. Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. The only thing I will say against that is the fella who ran across the track, which was crazy. Yeah, and even Lando was just like, "That guy's crazy."
Yeah,
which made me chuckle, but at the same time, it's just like, "What is he doing?"
It's definitely, we need to remember as well that after everything, there was a race that happened that was finished.
Oh yeah,
and on the restart, I mean,
oh yeah, oh yeah, the rest of that happened, didn't
on the restart. Obviously, I don't know about you, but it was tension for me again because you're watching it. It wasn't as exciting as it was first time round because I was just nervous as hell that something was going to happen again. And then we get halfway around the lap, and you see yellow flags in the safety car, and I just put my head in my hands and was just like, "Oh no, what's happened this time? Please no." And it cuts to Lance Stroll's car upside down on the track. And my first thought was, oh, you know, please be okay. But then you kind of, you look at it and it all looked okay. And then you hear the radio straight away from Lance Stroll. And he was calm. He's like, "Yeah, I'm just hanging here upside down.
Just hanging upside down." And it did make me chuckle.
Whew, big relief from that for me. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, agreed. It was that, but then it was, you know, it's an emotional roller coaster, isn't it? Again, Jesus Christ, oh my goodness, please be okay. Yeah, he's fine. And I think what we then need to identify in both of those accidents is the halo works.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what that's shown us. And I think a couple of people said when they were interviewed about Roman or talking about Roman, and I think even Roman said in his video that he did from hospital, he was like, you know, a few years ago, I wasn't in favor of the halo system.
Yeah.
It saved my life. So, and obviously Lance being upside down, the halo would have protected him as well. So, yeah, whether you like the look of it or not, you can't deny it's a very effective way of keeping people safe.
Absolutely. It's doing its job.
I think George Russell summed it up. He said on his social media, you know, if there was any debate before, this has ended it. It's over. No more debate.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And after the incidents kind of calmed down, we had an absolutely fantastic race in the end. The McLarens, I thought, looked very feisty. I mean, Carlos Sainz, I think he drove from 15th up to 5th in the end, I think it was. In the race, I will just double check this now to make sure.
It was fifth because Lando was fourth, and they were fourth, fifth. They both had really difficult qualifying sessions, and then they seemed to capitalize it on the day and came out with a good result, which is obviously important for them constructors wise with their battle and to have Racing Point not do quite so well, probably, yeah, but bolsters their trying to get up high in constructors this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, Lando started 9th, Carlos 15th, and they finished 4th and 5th. Now, like you say, great performance for the team with the constructors in mind. And, you know, real good fight back for those guys. I mean, I think there was a Carlos Sainz overtake. I think it was on Charles Leclerc. And the way the camera picked up and the way he just threw it out of the inside into turn one, that was some overtake. It looked amazing. And other good, you know, racing on the day was Sergio Perez, who managed to kind of stay in the podium places for most of the race.
And then he burst into flames.
Yeah, obviously kept it third. It was, you know, third place on the track, and then his engine gave up.
He had such a strong start as well, and that start, you know, because obviously we, you know, by virtue of seeing that crash, we did see the start quite a few times as well. And
yeah.
He just, you know, galloped out of there, leaving, you know, especially, I'm sure we'll talk about him, but Bottas behind and absolutely powering forward. And yeah, just a shame that, what was it, 3 laps before the end? He burst into flames and has to call it quits.
Yeah. It was funny because I was watching and you could see his engine and it was like, puff of smoke, puff of smoke, puff of smoke, puff of smoke. And it just keep continuously smoking. And he just didn't care. He was still driving. He was like, "No, I'm finishing this race."
I refuse to acknowledge this, like, sheer force of will.
I am steam train, not an F1 car at this point.
And it was just, you know, in the end, it was just an entire engine failure. You know, it, it kind of went back to the 90s, the way it kind of failed like that. I thought, you know, as old school Formula One, just boom, there it goes. And he just didn't want to retire for that car, did he?
No, which you can completely understand, but at the same time, you need to consider the safety of yourself and everyone else on track. Yeah. But it's a frustration for them, I'm sure.
And of course, speaking of safety of everyone on track, we have to remember the safety of that marshal, like you said, running across in front of Lando Norris. I was watching the onboard just before we started, and I've never seen... when you're a kid, you're like 2, 3, 4 years old. Your parents, it's like, look left and right, listen, make sure it's clear, then you can cross. I mean, this guy, I think, needed to go through that stage again, because he just obviously didn't look, but the car's coming down at 100 and something miles an hour, and he just runs like across.
Well, I hate to be the one to tell you this, Rich, but the green cross code man has sadly departed us.
He has.
So, I mean, we're not even going to be able to get him out there to help out now, are we?
Oh my gosh. We have to find Bahrain's equivalent, but I'm sure they have one.
I'm sure they do.
They must.
Terrifyingly.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that changed the subject, but they had an advert probably at late 90s, maybe early 2000s, and I think it was like a hedgehog road safety advert.
I can sing you that song if you want. do you want me to?
Ted, go for it. We'll all love it.
Take care out on the street. Use your head and then your feet. Don't run out like a fool. Keep your head and play it cool. If you don't stay alert, you could end up getting hurt. You gotta stop and think and you'll be king of the road.
Woo!
There you go.
That's absolutely awesome.
So who says advertising doesn't work? Because that would have been from the 1990s when I was a kid. And I loved it. Little animated hedgehogs. Yeah, super cute.
So you know what? I'm gonna do it tonight. I'm gonna cut that audio of you singing. I'm gonna dub the video over the top, and we'll Instagram it, Facebook, Twitter, the lot. We'll get that out.
I can tell you right now, Rich, I sang it a little bit quicker than the advert does to try and get through it. So you might have to do some creative editing on your end, but if you're up for it, go for it.
You sang it very well, to be honest. So.
Oh, that's really kind of you. Thank you.
I'm impressed. Yeah. It's better than my singing. We won't touch on that.
I'm blushing.
For people wanting to buy it.
Yeah. Well, hang on. I don't think I have the rights. So just be careful on that one. And I mean... they must have paid for the rights, because it's a paraphrasing of, King of the Road. I know the Dean Martin version, but I don't know. I don't think Dean Martin did it originally. Someone will tell me, I'm sure. But
I'm sure we can get it to Christmas number one. It'll be fine.
Absolutely. Lad, baby, eat your heart out. We're doing this one for... we're raising money for... What are we raising money for? We'll have to think of something.
We'll find something. We'll find a charity for... Grosjean, something relating to Romain Grosjean. This is what we're talking about.
For him.
We'll link it.
Anyway.
But
I think that's the first time I've ever sung on this podcast. I think it's the first for everything.
Possibly, and
the last. Spot on.
No, I don't want it to be the last. That was awesome. I love it.
Well, thanks, Rich. You're very kind.
But anyone who's listening, please keep an eye on social media. I'll try and put that up tonight. Keep an eye on our social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Handle for all three of those is at the NRF1. You can also contact us in plenty of other places. Patreon is a good place to start as well, after social media, because I already said start there, but start both of them. Why not? Patreon, patreon.com/NRF1. You will usually find the full edition of this podcast, which would include our Off the Weekend Awards, the Norfolk Notebook, and the NRF1 pit stops. But after the events of Bahrain, and knowing we still have another race to come in Bahrain, we're going to do things a little differently this week and kind of save them up for a bumper one next time. Email us your thoughts as well. The address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And if you're on Twitch, give us a follow on there. Just search the NRF1.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. and I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, but I did give you some beers.
So normally this would be for our patrons only, but like I said, we're doing things a little differently. And normally this would be our Norfolk notebook, but we're going to just leave this as an unofficial Norfolk notebook and do it as a little teaser, if I can actually say that properly. So we're going to mention Norfolk's Formula One interests. First of all, George Russell. He drove in the race. He finished 12th. I mean, he did his usual job in qualifying on the Saturday. Kind of unfortunate he wasn't, you know, two places further up to get a point. But I'm just looking at the news, guys, right now. BBC Sport have just put up 40 minutes ago an article, which is Williams, related to Williams, and it says, basically, it says Williams have said that Russell could replace Hamilton at the Sakhir Grand Prix.
Do not tease.
Ooh.
Do not tease with that.
So
I'm just looking at it as we speak. He's the leading contender. That's what the article is saying. It says they've guided his career since 2017. The fallback position is for Mercedes to use Stoffel, which we know. I always forget Stoffel raced for McLaren. But,
There's no official word yet who is actually replacing.
No, Stoffel said, so I was watching, I've never been so glued to Formula E updates, but he had a press conference today for that because they were doing testing. And he said that he would find out if he was going to drive for them after he arrived in Bahrain tomorrow. So that that would be Wednesday.
So I guess they're speaking with Williams. Mercedes is speaking with Williams, saying, like, can we offer you some free engines next year for George Russell for the next race? But yeah, I guess there's lots of contract permutations. There you go. How about that word for your listeners?
Fantastic word. Bloody well done.
That's my word for the day.
We were also talking, weren't we, about if that happens, what the implications are further down the chain, as it were, which they also mention in this article about Jack Aitken, the reserve driver for Williams. But he's never raced in F1. Still in F2, so that might be a big call this weekend as well for him. But yeah, it's an interesting chain of events that it leads off to.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get stuck into that a bit more in a little while. And the other guy we need to touch on is Alex Albon. He benefited perfectly from Sergio Perez's engine failure, and he gained a podium, third place. At the end of the day, to you know, be in the position for third, you have to be up there in the first place. So, I mean, he benefited from Perez's engine failure. He took advantage, but at the end of the day, you know, he was only one place behind. He was the guy who's next in line, basically. Nice to see him get a podium. Do you think this will kind of help him for next year, trying to guarantee his seat? Obviously fighting Sergio Perez for that, really.
He had a good qualifying as well. It was an all-round decent weekend for Albon. You know, he qualified fourth behind Max, so it was hardly that they could say, you know, on the grounds of this weekend that he hadn't been made the most of it, considering who was ahead of them. I just wonder if it's too little too late. And I'm a big Albon fan, you know. I really rate the guy, but it's been a tough season for him. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. You know, I've listened to commentators give him chance after chance after chance, and I don't know what's not clicking. Is it the car's not clicking? Is he not clicking with the team? But I think the way that Red Bull make their decisions sometimes, I think they'll have already decided in their heads, even though they said they won't make that decision kind of public until after the season's finished. I think, you know, I think Mr. Horner might know, you know, which way he's thinking already. And yeah, great. And double podium for the team. Well, fantastic. But the way he's talked about him in sort of clips and press releases and stuff, I think he's made his decision on him already. Yeah. I think it helps, makes Albon perhaps seem more attractive to another team, but not to Red Bull.
I think the Netflix documentary which will probably come out, I guess, March time, following this season, I expect is going to be something really, really fascinating, because obviously so much has gone on this year. Finding out all that's in the background, especially with this, is going to be a real one to follow. Now, moving on, usually this would be our Off the Weekend Awards. Again, freebie for you non-Patreoners. Changing it. So you're going to get one reward free this week. And it's going to be the Rodolfo Gonzalez Driver of the Weekend Award. Now, Formula One fans officially voted Grosjean, understandable. And everyone said Alan van der Merwe, who is the medical car driver, which obviously makes a lot of sense too. Do you guys have any other nominations for who you would pick as the driver of the weekend?
I'd probably be tempted to go Checo, just because I don't think it's his fault that his engine went. And he was having a storming race, and especially it's what I like about it as well is it's a really big FU. You know, it's you want to let me go and keep the guy. I mean, we talked, we had some conversation in our chat, and I cannot remember if we talked about it on the last podcast. So please forgive me for that. But we talked about Stroll, and there was the discussion around, well, he's only in it because of daddy's money. And I remember, Rich, you and DT sort of both saying, you know, you can't just be in Formula One because your dad's rich. You have to have some ability behind the wheel. You have to have some level of merit. Hmm. But he's not the better driver at that team.
No, he's not.
And Sergio Perez is the better driver at that team. And he's the one that's been left without a seat in all of this. So for him to know that, for him to know coming in, this team doesn't want me, but I am still going to go out there and do the best that I can for this team and to be in it right the way up until three laps from the end. I think he drove fantastically. And again, also, you mentioned it earlier, a nod to Carlos and the way that he threw that McLaren up there was fantastic. So I'll go Checo.
Nice, good shout. Katie, you have a shout for driver of the weekend?
I'd written down Lando because I thought he'd come back well from what was a pretty terrible qualifying. By, you know, from his sort of perspective, I follow him on social, he wasn't pleased with it. But he, you know, he managed to keep calm while chaos was going on around him. You know, men running out the track in front of him, etc. And he, you know, he managed to help bring home solid points, you know, very good points for McLaren while they are fighting that midfield battle. So I'd put Lando in the mix for that.
Yeah, good shouts. I like them. And listeners, I mean, we have plenty more awards that we give out for the weekends. If you want to hear all of them normally, just get over to Patreon and join us on there. And yeah, you'll get the bonus extra long podcast every week, or every single one that we record anyway, because obviously there's not a race every week, but you know what I mean. But moving on, we should talk about all the latest news. So we obviously Haas have been the real talking point so far. They have confirmed Nikita Mazepin to drive for them for 2021. F2 driver moving up. I think he was linked kind of early on when they announced that Grosjean and Magnussen wouldn't be staying with the team. Either of you guys is particularly excited to see what he can do, or do you think it's just meh?
I have no idea who he is.
I've got to appreciate a bit of, I hate the way, a bit of fresh blood in the sport, just to see if he makes any difference. I just don't rate that car at all. And I think he's, you know, he could end up going under the radar a bit, kind of like Latifi has done this year, because it's just not a very good car. I mean, good luck to him. You know, he's won some races in F2. He's a, correct me if I'm wrong, he's another kind of, in inverted commas, pay driver. Mm. Son of a Russian billionaire, I believe. But, you know, it's great to get new faces into the sport, freshens things up a bit. I just don't think that car's going anywhere particularly at the moment. And unless something radically changes, I think he'll be fighting off the likes of Latifi for the back spot, unfortunately.
Mm. And at least he's not Pastor Maldonado.
You find a positive in everything, Pat.
Oh, I try.
We also need to mention the Corona has struck again, this time 7-time world champion Lewis Hamilton. He has confirmed that he has had a positive test. So he is going to miss the next race, which is the Sakhir Grand Prix, which is the second Bahrain Grand Prix. We kind of already discussed who could potentially replace him. We mentioned about George Russell with the news kind of just happening. And we mentioned Stoffel van Dorn. So we suspect it's one of those two. But I also understand that he's also a doubt for racing in Abu Dhabi due to the strict restrictions that they have in the UAE. It depends when he returns a negative test because Hamilton won't be able to travel until he gets a negative test. So depending how badly affected, we'll see. But it could be the last we've seen him in for 2020. And I know, Ped, you said in the last podcast, you asked the question, do you think Hamilton would just sit out the last few races? I mean, it seems like he potentially could do, but maybe unwillingly.
Yeah, I don't think sitting out is the right term. But also, I think there's potentially an argument to be made for why you're rushing him back.
Yeah.
I can understand why you're rushing him back, because you desperately want Bottas to finish second. And that is a battle that's still very much alive. And would Lewis have any issue to helping Bottas haul points? I doubt it. Would he move aside and let Bottas win? Definitely not. Even though he's got everything wrapped up, you saw from how he drove this weekend that he is still so dialed in. And, you know, what's left to go for? Legacy. And to put that legacy so far out of reach that it's never questioned again. And I think that's potentially part of what could be motivating him. But are we, as a viewing public, going to miss out if Lewis Hamilton doesn't race again this season? Not really. I don't think we are. I think we're going to still get some really good punchy racing. I think we've seen Bottas go backwards the last two races. And therefore, that says to me that with Lewis out of the picture, don't expect that Valtteri is going to automatically be the dominant car on track, because I just don't think that's going to happen. So actually, with Lewis out of the picture, we're still going to get really, really compelling races. So for us as a group of fans watching the sport, I don't think this is a bad thing at all. And I don't think it will impact on the outcome of the season. Now, had we been going down to the wire and it was a tight battle for first place in the championship, I'd be really interested to see how this played out, because do we get creative with our test results? How quickly are we pushing through fresh testing? How quickly are we chasing for false positives? Like, you know, the machine would be going into overdrive if the championship was still to be decided in any way at all. And that's, again, my cynical side coming out.
And it's a good point, though. It's, you know, If this was a season decide, or, you know, championship deciding race, the consequences could have been huge for anyone in the, you know, championship winning position if they suddenly returned a positive test and had to sit out races. It can affect a lot. So it's fortunate for him, obviously, he's done the job already. But you know, it could have been a big consequences otherwise.
I think there are still some consequences potentially from this, because if Russell does get that seat to try out for the weekend, and he takes like it to a duck to water, you know, he properly goes for it and, you know, wins it or something like that, then I start looking at Valtteri Bottas and going, well, Russell, you know, he's tested this car and whatever, but he's just gone here and run around that track, you know, with barely a few days notice, and he's won the thing. Why aren't you doing that? So I don't know. It might be in his better interest, perhaps, that somebody like Stoffel takes the seat rather than Russell and puts his own seat in danger. I don't know. But it does make me think. I think the only thing that Hamilton perhaps is missing out on, because they said if he won this race and the next race, that would be the grand total of 100 race wins, I believe, which would have been a nice round number to end the season on. But I think that's the only thing he kind of misses out from this.
Yeah, that's true.
He's also up for Sports Personality of the Year, they announced today.
Oh, fantastic.
He won't win it.
No.
Don't get me started. He should. He bloody well should. But I don't. But then I don't know enough about what's going on in sport just generally at the moment to say who would win, who would be a better shout. I mean, I don't know. So Someone was it Kyle was educating me on how good the actual I was talking down the cricketer. Yeah, I was talking down the cricket chap who got knighted and saying what's he ever done, and you know, Kyle did kind of educate me on that, which was useful. So I don't know who else is up against him in sports.
Yeah, I've just brought it up to see who he's up against. So
Who you got?
Stuart Broad, the cricketer.
Thank you. I wouldn't have known.
I thought cricket was kind of last year's big win with the World Cup.
Yeah, wasn't it? You know, come on.
Yeah. The only woman is Holly Doyle, a jockey, up against Tyson Fury, boxer.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Liverpool's Jordan Henderson.
He's a footballer.
Yeah. And Ronnie O'Sullivan, snooker.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Ronnie, we had some chat about Ronnie in our group, didn't we?
Is it only six contenders? That's kind of strange to me.
Yeah, I guess a lot of sports haven't, you know, done that much this year. I think they've managed to narrow it down to the few sports that have managed to get out and about, really, I'd say.
Yeah, that is strange. I think just a quick shout, Stuart Broad, he is a brilliant cricketer.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
But I think Hamilton's achievements are the one. I think he should win that one.
I think he's got a more likely chance than he has done before of winning that compared to everybody else.
Yeah. But Ped, I know you're a snooker fan, and you've got the comments that we obviously spoken about with Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Yeah, well, I mean, O'Sullivan won his sixth World Championship this year, and his first was in 2001. So that is a 19-year stretch of dominance. I mean, and it is dominance. If you watch, you know, Ronnie O'Sullivan is that snooker, and this is not a snooker podcast, and I get that, but Ronnie O'Sullivan is one of those snooker players where people don't watch snooker, but they'll watch Ronnie. Yeah. And there's plenty of people that I have met that are like, no, I don't really like snooker, but I will watch Ronnie. He's a polarizing figure. He's a natural talent, an absolute genius. He's had his own fair share of mental health issues. He's fought his own demons. He's talked himself about falling in and out of love with his own sport. But what he's been able to do on the table is unparalleled. It's utterly fantastic. And when I saw a feature on him at one championship, and they said, you know, he's got this many titles, this many ranking championships, this many competitive century breaks, he's got multiple maximums, and he's still counted as an underachiever compared to what his natural talent could have afforded him. So, yeah, he's a great shout, but he's not Lewis Hamilton. And the dominance that Lewis Hamilton has shown, not just this season, but in the last, you know, however many, it's unparalleled. And also in terms of what Lewis Hamilton stands for away from the track, the work that he does for diversity, the success that he's had despite being the only representative of his culture in the sport. That must account for something for me, because when you're Sports Personality of the Year, you should be able to be someone that people can look up to. I'm not saying you can't look up to Ronnie O'Sullivan, but I'm saying that maybe Lewis Hamilton has more of a universal appeal to him.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And it'll be very interesting to see how people, because I think it's a public vote, isn't it, for the Sports Personality?
I'm going to register all my burner accounts.
Yeah, voting will be open to the public during the program, which is on the 20th of December.
So it depends whose fans tune in to vote. But
I think of all those, I think he's probably got one of the stronger fan bases as well. Tyson Fury's probably got a decent one. Jordan Henson definitely has a decent one, but I think he's more than up there with people who would have a strong fan base that would tune in and vote for him.
Yeah.
If Tyson Fury's up for it, are we not surprised that Anthony Joshua's not up for it? Hasn't Anthony Joshua had a successful boxing year, or has he not been boxing?
He lost his fight, was it just before Christmas or just after Christmas last year? He lost his fight and lost his belts, but then they fought again earlier, I think the start of this year.
Was that Ruiz?
Yeah, he lost. Yeah. And then he won. So
he beat him quite handily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So fair enough. Thanks, Rich. Boxing, all right.
I think he's fighting again soon, but I'll have to check. And one more bit of news we need to touch on. This time it is Formula One based fully.
Yeah. Sorry,
we got completely sidetracked.
Apologies, team. Sorry.
But Pietro Fittipaldi, he is going to be standing in for Romain Grosjean at this weekend's Sakhir Grand Prix. And like we've said, Grosjean is hoping to return in Abu Dhabi. Hopefully he will. We'll see. But it seems a suitable point. We might as well move on and do a quick preview of the next Grand Prix. This is the second Bahrain Grand Prix. It's the same circuit, but a different track layout. So they're using the outer circuit this time, which, according to Norfolk favourite Martin Brundle, has said it is much like Thruxton, if you know your British racing circuits. But anyone who's watched any of the British touring car races, which I can say I have, Thruxton is a great circuit. So if Bahrain's going to be like that, we're in for a treat.
I can't say that I'm familiar with Thruxton as a circuit, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to have obviously two in one tracks, but obviously cutting out that corner where they were making all the problems being as well. It's nice that we have been shaking things up this year with different tracks and stuff, and just be interesting to see whether this kind of turns everything on its head again in the good way, not in the kind of flipping your car over way. I will clarify that one.
that's all right. It's hard to kind of make these analogies and things without almost referencing something that could be insinuated as being really bad, so it's fine. We'll allow it, and I'm sure our listeners will as well. But we might as well do some predictions for fun. Any predictions you want to make for this weekend?
Predictions. Put me on the spot now, Rich.
If George gets Lewis's seat this weekend, he'll get podium.
Nice.
Oh, that's huge. Oh, massive. I love that.
I truly believe, because George has got such a talent with his racing, I truly believe that he is like definitely one of the better drivers on the grid. And I think if he was in a good car, I think he'd be fighting with the podium boys.
I think there's absolutely no doubt that he is rapid. Hang on a minute.
I'll give you some thinking time, because I'm going to throw one in there.
Go for it.
And I'm going to say McLaren podium.
Huge.
Which side of the garage?
The orange side. You can't make me choose. I think a McLaren will be on the podium. I think a bit of luck, and I think they'll get there.
I'm going to go against you. I'm going to say that there's going to be a. I'm going to say they're going to bounce back. There's going to be a racing point on the podium.
Ooh.
I'm going to say that you're going to have a double points finish for Racing Point, and one of them will be on the podium.
Nice. It's like two in one. Love it.
That's it.
That's brilliant. Excellent. Well, I think with that, that is everything covered. So I'm going to say we will return with E273, which, if all goes to plan, will be our review of Bahrain Part 2. In the meantime, thank you, Katie and Ped, for joining me tonight.
Oh, a pleasure, mate.
Cheers.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye from the crew.
Goodbye.
Bye.
And goodbye from me. Goodbye.